With that being said, I am very happy that we saved probably the best for last, and I am very happy to announce Mr. Chris Ross on the board, fellow MVP, and he has got a massive knowledge on integration, and I'm pretty sure the next 35 minutes are going to be great for learning. Chris, take it away.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Mike. Well, welcome everybody online and in person. We've got, it looks to be about 300 people here in the audience, so please save your questions to the end. But in all seriousness, let's have a little bit of fun today and enjoy this session on really 35 minutes to integration enlightenment. So as Mike mentioned, my name is Chris Ross. I'm with a company called Cyrosyn. I'm a four-time MVP, and I'm Director of Program Management for my company. Today we're going to look at a myriad of topics. Number one, what is integration in general? Two, what is or why is integration important, rather? The types of integration that are at our disposal today. And we're going to look specifically at how you decide. And it's not a huge slide by any means, but there are some key points that I think you'll find of interest. Number four, we've got, demo. So we've got 35 minutes here, and really what I want to do is impart a lot of wisdom and through practical application. So I'm going to take you into specific integrations and show you what you can actually do with a little bit of ingenuity and the right integration path. Next, we'll look at the outcomes. What are the fruits of our integrations, and what do they really mean? We'll look at our conclusions, and lastly, we'll wrap it up with next steps. So we've got an action-packed agenda for the next 22 and a half minutes anyways. So let's hop right into it. All right, so what is integration? Well, really, in information technology, system integration is the process of linking together two different computing systems, software applications, whether it's physically or functionally or even within process. So when you think about that, really the realm for integration is wide open. It doesn't just mean hooking one system to another and kicking back and letting them play. It's actually working with the data and making that data really fit what we need it to do. So there are really three main types of integration when we look at it. First and foremost is vertical integration. Vertical integration really, so if you want to look at it like this, if you want to draw a picture, when companies talk about all the disparate silos they have in their organization, that's typically due to vertical integration. They've integrated two products and they've created this, it could be a data warehouse or some other aspect that their data lives in, and then they programmatically go after it in that respect. Well, that can be good and bad, obviously. I think Microsoft and myself have been evangelizing dropping silos and really getting at data for many, many years now. So it can be, there are some benefits there too, though. Number one, it can be really quick to get up and actually get that data in your hands and start working with it. But over the long haul, that silo becomes a burden, whether it's administrative maintenance or it's just, you know, needing to extend it or do other things with that data in the future becomes problematic and quite costly. Number two is star integration, or also known as spaghetti. So, and that's exactly as you kind of can imagine it. You have a lot of different data points and a lot of different technologies talking to each other, and what you end up creating are a lot of dependencies and really fragile systems. So you want to go in and extend that new data set, get to new data, or maybe data has changed over time and there's just new information you need to capture. Well, you're afraid to touch it in case you break the whole system just by, you know, updating one aspect. So that can be really problematic. And then lastly, we'll talk about horizontal integration, and this is really where I think the sweet spot is. Horizontal integration is also known as Enterprise Service Bus, and if you've attended any of these conferences in the past, you certainly know that we're all about the bus. I could sing a elementary school rhyme there, but ultimately the idea is to create this pipeline, and to show you a graphic here, to create this pipeline where we can hop on a bus and work with many different sets of data in their native repositories, ultimately transforming and configuring that data along the bus to result what we or produce what we ultimately need as a result. So this is where we're going to focus today, and I think it's the most beneficial and the most agile in terms of integration paths. Lastly, I'll just make an aside here, and that's, you may have heard the term continuous integration. Has anybody heard that term before? A couple of you out there? Well, continuous integration is a process that is widely adopted by developers for creating code that is really agile and dynamic. In fact, there's a full agile process around that. We're not going to get into that so much today, but I want you to know that's kind of a stepping stone. If you're thinking about integrations in the future and practices where you can start to implement integrations on your own and then create a life cycle for care and upkeep of these integrations, look to continuous integration. It's a great roadmap. So why is integration important? Well, number one, I'm just going to tell you, it's better. It's better because we can build purpose-driven solutions. We reduce the number of connections and therefore complexity and interfaces that are involved in supporting and writing these solutions. And really, we can adhere to best practice and standards when we do this because we're creating, you know, again, the transformed integration that we need real time. That obviously means it makes things faster. I can use an enterprise service bus capable of translating everything on the fly, reducing the number of interfaces, and that reduces complexity and the chance of breaking things in the future. Of course, lastly, it's significantly cheaper. Fixes are typically less costly and have a much smaller footprint, if you will, than a vertical integration or a star integration for sure. They're easily repeatable. In fact, you're going to see today in my examples, I've taken a couple of different processes and I've construed them to do many different things. And you'll see how that flexibility allows us to code quickly and come up with really dynamic solutions. And then, of course, lastly, they're completely transparent, where we don't have to depend necessarily on a huge library or custom built solutions in terms of like thousands of lines of code, big monolithic efforts to actually get to this integration. It's pretty straightforward. So let's talk about our types of integration. There's a million of them out there, and I'm just going to highlight some of the ones that I think are kind of most relevant to us in this audience. So number one, we have native integrations. And these are things that you probably work with on a daily basis, like connectors. They're purpose-built solutions by the manufacturers that allow us to extend and capture data that would have ordinarily have been, you know, a large effort and huge enterprise thought processes go behind. So this is, you know, really an easy way to simply click and go. We're not going to spend any time on those today. I think we've all been connected to death. So let's move past that. The next level that I look at is native API and SDKs. All right, we're on the right path. But again, a lot of times we're working at a more programmatic level in that respect, a development level. And I think really we're not trying to boil the ocean. We just need to get solutions. So now we're going to get into the sweet spot. And this is SOAP-based web services, for instance. Yeah, they're old. You know, SOAP has been around for, more years than I can even remember. But they're still very relevant. And if you're familiar with PowerShell, which I think is a very common language that we all speak, you may recognize this commandlet, invoke dash web request. So it's a very versatile commandlet. Allows us to do a lot of great, cool things, and we're going to touch on that today. Next, are the more modern, if you will, RESTful web services. Now, the great thing there is the fine folks at Microsoft obviously saw what power the invoke-web request was, and they created a similar invoke-rest method. And we'll kind of juxtapose these together today, and we'll show you what each one does and how they really work, and dive into that. The next level past that is web service proxies. And for 35 minutes, that's a lot to dive into, but know that after you've wrapped your mind around SOAP-based and RESTful web services, that's kind of the next level you want to go. Really start looking at those. And of course, other integrations that, again, we don't have a lot of time to get into today, but to keep on the tip of your mind, database integrations. Number one, that can be done with PowerShell as well, but certainly you could do integrations that involved native SQL, for instance, stored procedures or things of that nature. So keep that in the forefront of your mind as well. And then lastly, I'll touch on this briefly, but there's a lot of third-party integrations that come into play that are becoming more and more relevant every day. And I put a few up here, just if this, then that comes to mind, because it's something that I use on a daily basis, both in my enterprise as well as in my personal life. So I'll point out a few good integrations there as well as we go. So real quick, how do we decide? Well, I'm going to make this super simple for you. Number one, we need to determine what is supported by the vendors. So a lot of times in our community where, you know, we're predominantly Windows driven, our vendors are giving us, they're handing us, some method to integrate with their products or work with their products. More times than not, we see that happening through whether it's native PowerShell commandlets or, you know, web APIs, SOAP APIs, RESTful APIs, like I mentioned. Number two, we want to look at your common team skill sets. So internally in your organizations, you're going to have a lot of different players on your team that have different skill sets. They're, you know, better in some areas and not so good in others. So take that into consideration when you're picking. And then lastly, understand the technology debt incurred in your choice. And if you've heard that term technology debt before, really it's an important concept because you can quickly, as I mentioned, you know, if you were developing at an SDK or API level, you can quickly go really deep, really fast, and that may be unsustainable for your organization in the future. So keep those things in mind, and we'll come back around to this at the end as well. All right, so let's get into the good stuff. Let's take a look at some examples in action. So number one, I just want to give a brief overview for everybody for each of these little demos. Demo number one here, we've got a very basic structured data example where we interact with invoke web request and produce more structured data. So that is I'm using this get-mortgage payment as my example. So 1 second. I am extended and let's go. Okay, so here's a script I put together, and let me zoom in for you. This is a pretty straightforward example. So number one, one thing I can look at and tell immediately that in line one of my code here, where I'm actually calling my URI, at the end of that, you see that mortgage.asmx. ASMX is highly indicative of a SOAP-based web service. So if you see a web service out there that a vendor has or that you can access, and you see .asmx, you can probably rest assured that it's SOAP-based. So that's a good indicator for what method you need to use when you're writing a code. So in this case, I'm doing invoke-web-request, and I'm actually pulling in a file, and I want to show you that file. It's called payments.xml. Oops, let's go see. So here's my XML file. Looks oddly like an XML file. It's structured in the respect that you see that we've got data types that are defined. We've got properties that are defined. Here I've got a term in years, interest, a loan amount, all those things that you would expect from any type of script. And that's my XML itself. So let's go ahead and close that out. And let's actually run this and see what happens. So if you notice, I'm dropping an out file, and it's because I want to show you what this structure looks like behind the scenes as well. So my out file is called output.html. Easy enough. So let's run this. All right, pretty non-eventful. That ran, it went out, it actually touched a website, a web service, did calculations and brought money back, or brought a dollar amount back. Let's take a look at our scripts again, and we should have, there's my output. If we open that up, again, not the most sexiest return, but we see what our monthly payment's gonna be, $1,467.52. All right, so real quick, let's dive in and actually look at this structure. There we go. So let me zoom in for you. You see our structure there off to the right. It's returned structured data. So in a split second, it went out, pulled all that information, ran calculations, and brought us back that total payment. So knowing that I'm getting structured data back, I can work with that. If I've got structured data going in and coming back, these are all objects that PowerShell loves and we can work with very easily. So let's take this to the next level. Oh, I hit function F5, I promise. All right, let's see. Next guy, shift F5, how about? All right, so our next demo is a little bit more complex. This is actually taking some data, GPS location, and allowing me to choose how I want to interact by calculating some directions, if you will. So we're using the Google Maps API in this case, and I can tell it if I'm walking or driving or riding. It's actually a pink bicycle. That didn't come across, unfortunately, but I'm a big fan of that pink bicycle. We're going to hit their web service, and we're going to bring that data back, and we're going to present it in a table for you. So very easy to understand and consume on this one. So here's my code. Oops. Didn't like to get rid of that. Let's see here. There we go. All right, so here's my code. You'll notice that up top, now I can start to define these properties as we go. So in this case, I'm actually telling it my mode of transportation is driving. And if we run this script, we get a pop-up that shows the directions from my house to Irvine here to the convention center. And it'll give me turn by turn and show me duration and things like my mode and distance, all that good stuff. So that easily I return that. If we wanted to have fun and see how long it's gonna take me to bike up here, because I'm big into biking, right, with my bike, let's go ahead and run this. Yep. And there we go. So just that quick, we've returned a lot of data, and my guess is, let's see here. I'm surprised, actually, this time of day, earlier, so it was, I had one stretch that was like 2.5 hours long, but this time of day, it's rerouting me different ways, so it's actually broken it up into much smaller increments. So really cool, real time on the fly. So nice stuff there. My next demo, and I won't click over to the actual full screen just to make it easier on us time-wise, but we've got a script here that will run. It'll hit a web service, Twitter's web service, pull back tweet information, and then it's going to hit another web service with Power BI. So this is a little bit more advanced, as you can imagine. And let's go ahead and run that. and show you. So just so you know, there's a couple of sections in here that I redacted so you don't see some of the API information that's personal to myself and my company. But just to kind of break this down for you, these are the parts that I left out. So you can see I've got username, password, specific authentication tokens, and other information that I pull in line in my script below as well. But so that's all very straightforward. And actually, we have instructions that kind of write out how you get all these things as well that we've posted to a blog. And I'll share that with you all at the end. But this script is running and pulling back data. And let's actually look at that. Ooh, not that guy, this guy. Here we go. So we've got a Power BI dashboard here that we've created that obviously allows us to work with the data that we're calling. So in this case, we can see the vast majority of our tweets are positive in nature. The secondary ones are neutral. Thankfully, there are no negative tweets out there. And we see tweet distribution across the globe based on geographic region, as well as who our biggest Twitter friends are. So really easy to wrap up into a nice dashboard. This integration took 15 minutes at most to write, in all honesty. So it wasn't that difficult, and it provides us with a really cool dashboard that we can provide marketing and our salespeople to know, you know, exactly what the world thinks of us. So all good there. All right, let's dig into my last demo. And this one's a doozy. And just to give you a quick glimpse of this, this is what we're looking at. So I'll point your attention to the center icon, the Azure Automation icon. So I've taken a script that we developed, and we've uploaded that into Azure Automation. We set a schedule around it. So once an hour, this script will run, and it'll go out. It'll hit a web service, which calls back to Harvest. Harvest is what we use to track our services organization and their billable time. It takes that data that we pull from Harvest, which is vastly unorganized in the way we need to work with it, and we basically transform it along the steps. So it goes from a lot of unorganized data to, you know, really a table within objects within PowerShell. And then lastly, we produce a table that we present up to Power BI, and Power BI is able to serve that out to all of our fine people via, you know, their tablets, cell phones, laptops, or however they're consuming that. That's all great. The piece I really want to highlight here is Slack. So if you notice, Slack has a double arrow. That means it goes both ways here. It can both receive information from our Harvest or from our Azure Automation script running, and actually let's see, web. There you are. So what's cool is, so this is my Slack, and I have this simple command / refresh dashboard, and if I execute that, it will go ahead and kick off a web request. And what's happening in the background is that's actually gone out to Azure Automation and kicked a web worker off to run this particular job on demand. And what's cool is, in a few moments, it'll start to update, and you'll start seeing that, well, actually, it was 5 p.m. when it ran, so I should be good. So it'll start updating and showing, retrieving all the information back out of Harvest and starting to really cultivate that in Azure itself. So we'll let that run, and I want to show you this script because, well, honestly, it's quite extensive, but really, we're just transforming the data. So when we go to Harvest, when we get that data, it's in multiple tables. And right now, Power BI does not deal well with multiple tables. So we need to take it and put it into a mechanism that we can deal with. And that's fine. We do so. There's all this, like I said, is blogged right now. And it's actually out over on Seth Cousins, who's my general manager at Cyrison, on his blog. You'll see we've got an automation series here, so you can go grab that. But We've got all the ins and outs of how we put that together and what everything is doing behind the scenes. And you can go pull that up anytime. You can see my jobs are updating there in Slack. So what's cool is that's all automated. We've now taken, you know, what is a very arduous process, and we've really streamlined it, integrated it fully, and it's off and running here. So let's wrap things up. I know we're about over time. So what are our desired outcomes? Well, with this last one, our desired outcome was to pull a really comprehensive set of dashboards together, and we did so right here. So that data, you can see, last updated at 5:04, so it's still rolling through its script right now. It takes about 4 minutes to run that, but it's pulling all that data, and it's providing our graphs and business intelligence that we need to really be able to make good decisions on what we're doing as a business and the direction we're headed. So that's all fantastic. So really, what are the conclusions here? Well, I wanted to, number one, show you that PowerShell is extremely easy to work with. You can take something that's very complex, so to speak, and break it down into small segments within your PowerShell to really achieve your required or desired results. I love this quote. I stole it gratuitously from somewhere on the internet. If PowerShell is all about objectifying data, REST is about making it easy to say, hey, I want data, and invoke REST method is PowerShell's way of saying, okay, let's go there. So I love it. It's all very straightforward and very easy to harness in that respect. And lastly, I just want to leave you with a few next steps. Get your hands dirty. Really start working with these items and have fun doing it, because that's really how you're going to learn on a day-to-day basis, is coming up with really cool ideas that can provide, whether it's business value or personal value, for your own enjoyment. Lastly, we've got a couple of items you can check out. So like I mentioned, everything is on Seth's blog right now and Cyrus Sin's blog as well. There were a couple of PowerShell commandlets that were developed in the community, PowerBips and Invoke Twitter APIs that we used in this, so I wanted to give them their proper due. And lastly, bam, go out, have fun, get your hands dirty, and come up with some really cool solutions. Awesome. Thank you.